Do you have a loved one that might need a little extra care? Check out Regency on the Lake. Located in Fort Gratiot, Regency on the Lake offers the latest healthcare services with rehab, respite, and long-term care. 810-385-7260.
All right, beautiful morning in progress. We'll take a look at that weather forecast again coming up in just a few minutes. It's America 250, our 250th anniversary, a time for us to really look back on 250 years of this country and really how it all started. Joining us right now, history teacher at Springfield Chestnut Hill Academy in Philadelphia. He holds a PhD in history from Temple University. He is an acclaimed author, and his new book is called The Unfinished Business of 1776, Why the American Revolution Never Ended, Thomas Richards Jr. on the line with us right now. Thomas, good morning.
Good morning, Paul. Thanks for having me.
I want to start with the title, Why the American Revolution Never Ended. What do you mean by that?
Well, the book looks at all the Americans who, after the American Revolution ends, they are not everyone is satisfied with the way things work out. They're happy to be independent from Britain, but they believe that they should have more things, maybe more land or more independence or more rights. And so Americans keep pushing on, to gain more rights over this time period in the early Republic, that they believe the American, they can keep, you know, pushing the revolution forward. It's not like everyone's just happy and kind of everyone gets along in the 1790s. It's a much more complicated story.
And in fact, that unfolds over the next 250 years, really. You lay out your argument that the Constitution was always a work in progress. Talk a little bit more about that.
Well, when the Constitution is written, probably about half of Americans are not thrilled with what's in it. They see it as having too powerful central government. Some Americans see it as too pro-slavery. Other Americans see it as too anti-slavery. And so from the get-go, as soon as the Constitution is ratified, Americans are working to change it, to do things that they believe are constitutional that maybe the Founding Fathers didn't intend. Most famously, the Bill of Rights was not in the Constitution. Many Americans are... that's the only reason they will support the Constitution. They basically say, you give us the Constitution, we will give you the Constitution, but you need to give us a Bill of Rights. And so the Bill of Rights is a result of regular Americans kind of pushing back on the powers of the Constitution. And that's kind of what Americans today celebrate the most. It's not the work of the Founding Fathers. It's regular Americans who fought for their rights, and that's why we have the Bill of Rights today.
That is interesting. A lot of people, constitutional fundamentalists, they want to adhere to, the very letter of the Constitution itself. What did the Founding Fathers mean? You say that's somewhat flawed. How come?
The idea of constitutional originalism and figuring out kind of what was meant at the time, there's an intellectual coherence that kind of sounds great. Let's figure out, I kind of get that idea of, well, if we're going to understand, run a government by what people wrote 250 years ago, we should figure out what they meant. But here's the problem. They all meant different things. There were 2.5 million Americans in 1787 when the Constitution is written. There's 55 men writing the Constitution. They all believe very different things. Alexander Hamilton and James Madison are allies when they draft the Constitution. They're on the same side. As soon as the Constitution is put in practice and George Washington becomes president, they completely split. They completely disagree about what the Constitution means. And Hamilton kind of wants a more powerful central government, and Madison wants more states' rights. And so if you're trying to go back and say, well, what did the Founding Fathers want? What did they mean? Well, they meant all different things. You can really pick and choose whatever. You can find someone who said something 250 years ago to help support your point. And you can find someone who said the exact opposite that would argue against your point.
Talking with Thomas Richards Jr., his book looks back on 250 years, really, of this Constitution. It's called The Unfinished Business of 1776. One thing that the Founding Fathers were pretty consistent on, though, was the fear of an executive with too much power. And we're certainly seeing a lot more power in the executive branch of government right now, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. The irony of the kind of originalist doctrine is that, as I said, that you really can't find a consistency if you look back. The one thing that almost everyone is pretty consistent about is that a too powerful executive is a problem. I mean, that is exactly what they were fighting against during the Revolutionary War. They want to get rid of King George III. And that's the kind of the one thing that is consistent across, that is the most central originalist thinking. And there is a certain irony that the Supreme Court has basically said, the president has a lot more power than is said in the Constitution, and is immune from certain laws don't apply until he's gone. All this stuff. I mean, that is something I think all of the founding fathers would have been pretty appalled at, considering all they had fought for.
You talk in your book about Thomas Paine's common sense and how Democrats today could really look at that and sort of embrace it. Talk a little bit more about Thomas Paine's common sense.
Thomas Paine writes Common Sense in January of 1776, and it is the kind of the key pamphlet, the key document that gets a lot of Americans who are on the fence about supporting independence. It pushes them to independence. In some ways, it might be the most important document written in American history, because maybe there's no United States without Tom Paine. Paine is really, what makes Paine so brilliant is that he is very simple. He basically says, what do we need from government? We want to live prosperously. We want to be free. And if that's not what's happening, then we have a right to overthrow it. He says it's silly to have one person in charge. Here's why it's silly, kind of poking fun at the king. We just are the whim of a person who, is just a regular person like you and me. But I think what Democrats can take from that is that simplicity that, I think Democrats like to, not all Democrats, but there is kind of this, how many boxes can we check to please as many different people as possible? And kind of you run policy through a lab. And I think Democrats, in general, and politicians, it's simple. If something is doing good for a majority of people and it gives people more freedom and more independence and more prosperity, then we should support it. And if it doesn't, then, leave it be.
I think the thing that has kept this republic together for 250 years is that there is, and I know this may sound, glass half full or something, there is more that unites us than divides us as a nation. Do you see that as maybe being a fundamental truth, and can we keep that going for another 250 years or 25 years or 2 years?
I think it is a fundamental truth for most of American history, but of course the Civil War is the big my book kind of ends after the Civil War. Mm-hmm. That is the big moment. Talking about unfinished business and the argument over slavery that Americans can't get along, and it becomes the worst war in American history. And the whole United States is restructured, and the Constitution is restructured. New amendments are added. So there's that one major moment. Other than that, I think you're right that Americans generally, when push comes to shove, have come to some sort of agreement. Or agree to disagree. My one concern, I guess, moving forward is the rise of social media and the ability of Americans. We have an ability now to basically only tune into the people we agree with, that we can shut out the world, go online, Google something, or look at an AI, and then have our ideas supported. And I think what's crucial today is for Americans of all different different political backgrounds and persuasions to actually talk to one another in real life, in real time, and have real conversations. It's much easier to get angry and tune people out when you don't know who they are online. But people tend to listen when they're in front of one another. So I think that's kind of the key thing moving forward. And that's my one concern, that technology might change how we discuss, or it already is changing how we discuss.
Could not agree with you more on that. Absolutely. Thomas, great talking to you. Good luck with the book. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Paul. This is great.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Appreciate it.